Here's the thing about Game of Thrones. It's not going to last forever. In fact, the final episode is scheduled for 2018. But hope endures for George R.R. Martin fans, and that comes in the form of his latest project, a television series based on Wild Cards, the anthology and novel series that Martin launched back in 1986. The show is in the works and could hit TV screens in the next couple of years. George R.R. Martin is in town for the 74th science fiction convention known as Worldcon, and he's celebrating the release of his latest book, High Stakes, a Wild Cards novel. George R.R. Martin is the author of the international best-selling Song of Ice and Fire series, adapted into the hit TV series Game of Thrones. Martin has won the Hugo, Nebula, Bram Stoker, and World Fantasy Awards for his numerous novels and short stories. George, what a pleasure to have you here. Welcome.
Oh, it's great to be here. It's always nice to be back in Kansas City.
There you go. He's joined by Melinda M. Snodgrass, his co-editor of the Wild Card series. She's worked on staff on numerous shows in Hollywood, including Star Trek, The Next Generation. And Melinda, so good to have you too. Welcome.
Thank you so much. This is going to be such a delight.
Well, George, you have some history in Kansas City. You were here 40 years ago for Mid-America Con 1, and that was the year you launched your first Hugo Losers Party because you lost two Hugos that year, probably the last time you did. The Hugo is the award that goes to the best science fiction or fantasy works and achievements of the previous year. What was the point of the Hugo Losers Party, George?
Well, I did lose two Hugos that year. I'd lost some before. The Hugos are the Oscars of science fiction.
Yes,
so there are five nominees in each category, and then they open the envelope and you see who won.
Yeah.
So I was up in two categories in 76, and my friend Gardner Dozois was up, and we all lost. I lost in both categories. Gardner lost his award. And we were watching afterwards as the winners went down to the bar and they were ordering bottles of champagne and they were toasting each other and they were showing everybody their bright, shiny Hugo awards. And we said, man, there should be a party for us losers, too. And it happened. That convention was in the old Muebuck Hotel.
There you go.
Not yet expanded to its modern Marriott Muebuck, but the old classic Muebuck. And I had happened to have a hotel room that was right off the pool deck. So even though it was a small room, we could expand onto the pool deck. And I said, let's throw our own party for the losers. And, of course, neither
Good
Gardner or I had any money. So we went around and we scrounged leftover liquor from the other parties. And, jugs of Gallo wine and, generic beer and whatever we could get. But it turned out to be the best party convention. Everybody came to the door, and, if they were a loser, if they had lost like us, we welcomed them in, we cheered them. And some of the winners showed up and tried to get in the party, and we threw pretzels at them and booed them until they told us that, no, they were losers too for various reasons.
Am I right, George, that part of your thinking was you had a little bit of disagreement with some of the folks who were winning the awards?
No, not really.
Not really?
Not really, no.
Okay. But you thought maybe some others might have been more worthy.
Well, yeah. Every year, there's it's like the Oscars. Yeah, I mean that's the fun of it. You can argue it. Who should win the Oscar? Who should lose the Oscar? And the winners are never quite what you would want. But no, I didn't have any problem with the people winning the awards.
Yeah.
The two I lost to Larry Niven and Roger Zelazny, who were just amazing, gigantic writers.
Yeah.
Although it's interesting, over at this year's Mid-American, the 2016 version, Ken Keller, who was the chairman of the 76 version, has for the first time revealed the actual vote counts.
Oh, really?
Never been revealed before from 76, and it looks like I lost one of those awards by 11 votes.
Oh, wow.
So I'm going to have to drink even more now that I know that I lost
so
that.
So close.
11 years, yeah.
You called that first convention in 76 here in Kansas City your favorite Worldcon of all time, and I'm wondering why. Just because of that, or is there something else to it?
No, it was something else to it. It was Worldcon goes back to the 1930s, and it moves around constantly. So every year it's in a different city, and certain traditions develop. But when it came to Kansas City in 1976, Ken Keller, the guy who was the chairman, and the people who were running it were quite young, actually, as fans. I look back and I'm astonished. They were all in like their 20s and early 30s. And they had never done a convention on a scale before. So it's like they reinvented the wheel, and they invented it better. They did all sorts of innovative things that no Worldcon before that had ever done, but that all subsequent Worldcons have done.
Oh, that's interesting.
And therefore, they really redefined what Worldcon was. For example, on the Hugo Awards, up to 1976, the Hugo Awards were presented at a banquet. So you had to buy a ticket and eat the rubber chicken and sit there. 76 got rid of that, and they went to the present Oscar-like theater-style presentation, which is much better. You don't have to sit for 2 hours eating bad hotel food. They introduced multi-track programming. Up to then, conventions just had one track of panel discussions, and Ken said, oh, no, we have a lot of people here. Let's have three tracks going on at once, and you can choose which panel you want to go to.
Yeah.
And a lot of things like that that they did that were really innovative and interesting.
Well, let's talk about a project that occupies both of your time these days, and that's Wild Cards, which is an alternate history version of the U.S. in which an alien virus hits Manhattan in 1946 and spreads across the globe. This is a sprawling work, and Melinda, I'm wondering, what do you like most about it?
I love the fact that we can talk about real-world problems in a sort of setting that takes the heat off of them. Mm-hmm. In a way, science fiction gives you a safe place to talk about very serious issues.
Issues
racism,
like what?
Bigotry, racism, the rise of problems in around the world. I mean, our writers are so creative. We had writers proposing a caliphate before ISIS became a thing. We had a very dangerous presidential candidate in one of our early books. And so it's that kind of thing that we've been pushing and able to speak to these issues in a way that is very different for certainly for the superhero franchises, I think.
You know, for folks who might not be familiar, this series is different in the sense that you incorporate so many writers that you two sort of ride herd over. I'm wondering, how did you come up with that concept, and how does it work in navigating a series with multiple writers?
Well, I don't want to take credit for coming up with the concept.
But you did, though, George.
Well, there were previous... It's called a shared world, and the first one was in science fiction was actually done by Lynn Abbey and Robert Asprin, who launched the Thieves' World shared worlds in the early 80s.
But you launched this particular series.
Yes, but yeah. Thieves' World was enormously successful, and suddenly everybody was doing a shared world. Most of them were fantasy shared worlds. You invent a fantasy city, and you know all these swordsmen and wizards and
elves
witches
and, whatnot,
and elves would come in, and they'd interact with each other. The idea is each writer creates their own character, but the background is shared. So my character meets your character, and they fight, or they fall in love, or whatever. All the paths cross, and hopefully the whole is greater than the sum of the parts.
Mm-hmm.
And we took that to and did it to superheroes. We were the first ones to apply that to superheroes. We were all comic fans. We love comic books, but we wanted to do a more realistic, grittier version of comic books in Probe and what superheroes, what superpowers would really mean in the real world. Now, as it happened, all of the other shared worlds, they enjoyed their brief day in the sun in the 80s and 90s, but then they were all gone. But Wild Cards has continued for now 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
We're celebrating our 30th anniversary, and we're coming out with our 23rd volume right here at the convention, High Stakes.
In fact, I should point out, you're going to be doing a book signing and an event with our friends over at Rainy Day Books. You'll be at the Kansas City Marriott downtown between 5 and 8 on Friday evening. Again, the event sponsored by Rainy Day Books and Fairway. You'll be signing your copies of the latest Wild Cards novel titled High Stakes. More information, call our friends at Rainy Day Books at 913-384-3126 or go to rainydaybooks.com. It'll be fun.
And yeah, that'll be great. And it's a mass signing. It's not just me and Melinda, but we have, because of the Worldcon, we have more Wildcard writers in one place at one time than we've ever had before. So we will have people like Walter John Williams and Carrie Vaughan, Diana Rowland, Marco Kluse, Joseph Miller, Michael Cassett. Yeah, just a whole army of people. And you can get all of your Wildcard books signed.
Well, Linda, what do you do when I assume you've had an author or two stray off the reservation a time or two? How do you reel them back?
Well, everybody comes into Wild Cards sort of knowing the ground rules, which is you have to play well with others, and you have to be willing to see what other people make of your characters. And to me, that's sort of the huge fun of it, is to see, you know, how does George see my character and how do I view his character? And we make it very clear to writers that you're going to have to do a lot of rewriting. You're going to have to be willing to give on certain things, work with other people. And
do most of them comply with that?
Really haven't had that much trouble over the years. I mean, people, it's fun. I truly think this is some of the most, I think the reason we keep doing it is because we've enjoyed it for so long and had such a good time doing it.
Melinda has been my assistant editor since the beginning of this.
Yes.
And in some cases when we have unruly writers, we play good cop, bad cop.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm the bad cop, and she plays the good cop and talks them down. What they really don't know is that
I think they would figure it is that
I'm really the softy, and Melinda.
I am much harder.
Are you?
Yeah. I am much harder. I'm like, George, just sit on them.
Yeah.
And he's going, no. And then I have to pretend to be mom. Yes, it's okay.
I understand. Yeah. Well, you two have been close for so many years. You must have some really interesting conversations about science fiction and fantasy that people would love to listen in on. Am I right about that?
Well, we've had a few. Yeah. We've had a few.
Your vision for where the genre is going. Do you have thoughts about that? Are you satisfied with science fiction and the state of it 30 years into this series? And is it what you thought it would be, Melinda?
I think science fiction is some of the most vibrant works that we've ever seen is being done right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it runs the gambit from, you know, dystopian works like The Wind-Up Girl, all the way through to space operas and great fantasy series. I mean, we can talk about anything in different ways. And I think I love science fiction because it gives you that range. You can tell stories in so many different settings and make different points. So,
George,
how do you feel?
I think that's all that's true of the books. And, of course, the other, Melinda and I have both worked extensively in television, and television is having a golden age for science fiction, fantasy, and horror. In the old days when there were just four networks or three networks,
yeah,
it was very hard to get any kind of science fiction or fantasy show on the air because, it doesn't have mainstream appeal. But now that there's 150 different people doing dramas, you don't need to appeal to 50% of the country. If you appeal to 10% of the country,
right, that's
a huge audience. So you can get shows like Game of Thrones. You can get new Star Trek shows like the one they're coming up, and you can get endless new television shows. We've had, you know, horror shows like Penny Dreadful and The Strain, American Horror Story, science fiction shows like The Expanse, and
fantasy shows like Once Upon a Time.
But where has science fiction exceeded your expectations over the course of the last three decades, and where has it fallen short?
I don't think science fiction has fallen short. I sometimes think the real world science has fallen short.
Oh, that's interesting. In what sense?
Well, I thought if you had gone back to 1976, George, at that Worldcon, and said, well, you're going to be back in Kansas City by 2016, what would the world be like? I would say, well, by 2016, we'll definitely have a colony on the moon, and we'll be going right for it. There'll probably be several large space stations. I think we'll have been to Mars by then and possibly put a colony there, too. I don't know. So it's very disappointing that
we've walked away from so much of it. Yeah.
Yes. And, of course, my flying car. I'm waiting for my flying car. I do have a Tesla, and I like that, but it's an amazing car, but it doesn't fly.
It doesn't, Teslas don't fly. It's disappointing.
Melinda, how about you in terms of the genre and where it's exceeded expectations or maybe fallen short compared to that first Worldcon back in Kansas City back in 76?
I think where it's exceeded is that I think it's spoken much more to issues of diversity and bringing gender issues in that haven't been seen earlier in science fiction, and the power of characterization. I mean, I love the fact that you tell great stories in science fiction and you have great characters in ways that sometimes mainstream fiction can't identify or can't make these so apparent to people as we can in science fiction. But I'm with George. I'm disappointed that we're sending unmanned probes and that we don't have the future I wanted. I mean, from the time I was a little girl and first saw the first episode of Star Trek, I wanted to go to space. I wanted to explore planets. And
what do you think happened to us? I mean, we had that, you know, Kennedy had the vision and we did it within the decade, and things were all systems go, it seemed like, for a while.
But we did it for a political reason. We did it to fight with an opponent. We didn't do it because we believed in humanity and that humanity's future was in the stars.
Well,
that was the difference. I mean, the focus was all about we have to beat the Russians. It wasn't about how is this good for us as a species on this planet and what worlds wait for us out
there. You share that view, George?
Yeah, and I think there's political reasons, too. I mean, aside from us science fiction geeks, space travel, interplanetary colonization, all of that doesn't have a political constituency the way other things do, you know? And politicians tend to think of the next election and you know, in four-year presidential terms. No one is really planning, well, what about 50 years in the future? And that's what space needs. You can't be looking to the next election 4 years and what's going to look popular then. You have to say, yeah, we're not going to see anything in 4 years, but in 50 years, this is going to make a huge difference. Yeah.
Well, we may have to, though, with climate change, unless we may end up, you know, making such a mess of things, we have to find an alternate world and a place to move. And then I think people would get serious about it. But we don't want us to get serious about it for that terrible bad reason, because the world has become so polluted and uninhabitable.
I wanted to say, getting back to Wild Cards, though, Melinda mentioned the characters of science fiction, and that's one of the things we're really proud of at Wild Card, you know.
Yeah.
We've got this amazing crew of writers, and they've invented amazing characters. I think the Wild Card universe, and we really hope to not just have one television show off this, but three or four linked television shows.
Is there definitely going to be a show?
Nothing is definite.
Nothing is in Hollywood. we're hoping. We're working hard. But
the contracts haven't been signed definitively.
Well, the contracts have been signed for, you know, we've sold them the television film rights owned by Universal's Universal
Cable
UPC.
CCP,
They will be developing a pilot script, which, you know, Melinda will be part of. And
you have to sort of stay back because you're tied to HBO,
yeah,
right?
So I'm exclusive to HBO. So this is not an HBO project at the present time. So as long as it is, I can't be directly involved. But I can stand on the cheer line and shake my pom-poms and all of that. And
tell me if I'm doing it wrong.
That's right.
Well, let me just interrupt just briefly just to remind our listeners, you're listening to Up to Date. We're visiting with two legends of the science fiction genre. Right here, George R. R. Martin, who created Game of Thrones. He's joined by his longtime co-editor Melinda M. Snodgrass here in our studios. What have you both learned from previous TV productions, the Game of Thrones, that you want to take to Wild Cards? Hopefully, what are the lessons learned that you don't want to repeat mistakes on here, Melinda?
What do I not want to? I guess I've been focusing on the positive. I think Wild Cards has such an enormous universe, and we can tell so many different kinds of stories. What I don't want is for us to be doing Villain of the Week. And I think what Wild Cards has done so beautifully is to have very real human interactions. I mean, George did a story that is so touching and heartfelt with one of his characters about a man who has to give up the woman he loves because of this virus that he's infected with, that they run the risk that their children will die. And for her, having a family is very important. It's a very poignant story. It's a very small story. There's no supervillain that's knocking down New York City. There's a story of a man having to make a very, very hard decision. Mm-hmm. And those are the kind of things I think that we can do really well in Wild Cards. I mean, we can't compete with the Marvel universe, the Marvel movie universe, with that kind of scale. But what we can do is speak to people's deepest hopes and dreams and losses. And I think we can do that very well.
Our starting premise, you know, all the way back in 86 was to consider the question of superpowers, such as seen in the comic books, more realistically. So, you know, like if you suddenly had superpowers, you could now fly. How would it change your life? How would it change? Well, you know, we thought about that realistically and said, well, you would probably continue to be a radio broadcaster and a host. You would just fly to work every morning. What we don't think you would probably do, and of course you can tell me, you probably would not go out and buy a spandex costume to begin fighting crime.
That's probably a fair, at this point in my life, George, thank you, yes.
And that was our assumption about all superpowers, that, you know, DC and Marvel and all the comic books always makes this assumption, oh, now I can throw lightning bolts, I must buy a spandex costume and fight crime. No, that's all wrong.
Yeah.
But it would change your life if you could throw lightning bolts or fly or throw tanks around or, you know, bullets would bounce off your chest. All of that stuff would change you, but how would it change you? And those are the kind of stories we like to tell.
How does it affect your family life? And one of the other things that we did that I think is one of the strengths of Wild Cards is real-world ramifications. If a character dies in Wild Cards, they don't get to come back. I mean, in the comics, it's always, well, there's always a way, you know, we can do something. No, we don't do that. People age. They get too old and they say, I don't want to do this anymore.
Well, as two people who have immersed themselves in the universe of superpowers for so many years, Melinda, which one do you wish you could have, having thought about this much more than I probably have?
I would love to be able to fly teleport. I think I would pick teleport because I have to be in L.A., but my heart is always in New Mexico, and I want to be able to go home in the blink of an eye. I mean, the power I really kind of want, which everybody thinks is boring, is I want to be practicality girl. I want to always know the right decision to make, to look ahead and go, oh, wait, don't do that. That's a terrible decision, and be able to warn the other superhero people, don't do that. That would be bad.
Yeah.
Teleport. I'll take teleporting.
How about you, George?
Well, I do like the idea of flying. It's always been attractive to me. Anything to get faster travel.
Do the ideas for what you want to write and what you want to see on the small screen, are they harder to come by at this point in your career, or are they easier to come by?
Ideas are easy. Yeah. I mean, whether it's Game of Thrones or Wild Cards, boy, I have ideas constantly. And something non-writers don't seem to realize, because I always get approached by people who say, oh, I have a great idea. I'll give you the idea, and you write it up, and we'll split the money. But writing it up is the hard part.
Yeah,
you
that's
know?
Where the rub
ideas
is.
Ideas are cheap. I have ideas every day. I have files of ideas more than I will ever write in what remains of my lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need anybody else's ideas. Ideas just come.
It's
translating those ideas into actual stories, getting the words on paper, getting the script done or the novel done. That's the hard part.
Is that easier for you now or harder?
In some ways, it's actually harder.
Really?
Writing my novels, the Game of Thrones novels and all that is maybe harder than it was before.
Expectations are huge,
they're gigantic. So much pressure, so many people looking at me.
And you feel that responsibility.
I do.
Well, and we also have expectations we put on ourselves. I have to do this better than the last thing I wrote. When you're first starting out, you don't know how hard this is. Mm-hmm. You're an innocent. You're like, oh, I can bang this story out. It'll be great. And now as you get older and you get more skills and more tools, you're starting to go, oh, wait a minute, that dialogue isn't good, or that scene transition, I really have to work on this. And I think you do slow down. You take more care with it because you know this is something you're trying to polish.
At this point in his career, how does George take your editing? Come on. How's that work?
We actually do very
laughing.
Well together. I mean, because we can just talk. I mean, and occasionally we give each other some grief, but mostly we take each other's notes pretty well.
Well, you need
George, please lose all that flashback.
You need somebody who can give it to you straight, don't you, George?
Yes, it is true. It is true.
I mean, yeah. Obviously, we only work together closely on Wild Cards, and that's where we have a lot of fun because we really get into it. We know these characters, and sometimes we even slip into talking as if we are the characters. That's deep in immersion that we have.
Well, that's the voice of Melinda M. Snodgrass. We're joined by George R.R. Martin, creator of the Game of Thrones series. Lots of places and times to intersect with these folks the next few days. More information at midamericacon2.org. Also go to Rainy Day Books website to get more information about the appearance coming up on Friday evening. And what a pleasure to have you guys here. Welcome back to Kansas City and enjoy your anniversary tour of our town in the years since
you've been. Got to get out and get some barbecue.
You got to get
some
there.
Burnt ends, man. We're in Kansas City.
I remember the first time I heard of the concept of burnt ends. When I first got to town, I was like, what is that?
Yeah.
Just amazing. Yeah. Thank you both very much.
Welcome.
Enjoyed it very much.
Thank
yeah.
you.